if we compare our lifestyle with the lifestyle of those living in the time of Christ, where Jesus said, give us this day our daily bread, when's the last time you worried about your daily bread? See, we're rich by the standards of third world countries, by the standards of Roman and the way the Roman, matter of fact, I've often illustrated it with, could Solomon even imagine what we have access to? I mean, he was one of the wealthiest guys. Did he have hot and cold running water? Did he have a car that could take him air-conditioned wherever he wanted? Did he have the ability to see what was going on all over the world, go into a store and buy things from almost any land at any time? And so when we talk about the rich, we got to be careful we don't give ourselves a pass. And so that's why I spent a lot of time, and I don't think we're going to deal with that a lot tonight because we've done it in the past, but if you'd like to look at the notes later, basically what I lay out is, that is there anything really wrong with being wealthy?
No.
Okay, thank you. That's the right answer. No. Was Abraham wealthy?
Yes.
Yeah, Abraham was wealthy. Did God tell Solomon, I'm going to make you wealthy? Did he do that to destroy him? No, he did it to bless him. Wealth is just like every other commodity that we have. When we're born, do we have certain strengths and weaknesses that other people don't have? So each one of us has gifts. Is wealth another gift? It's just a gift. But it comes with a very dangerous, and I guess all of them do. Remember what God said to Jeremiah in chapter 9, verse 23? Let not the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the wise man glory in his wisdom. Let not the rich man glory in his wealth. See, that's where the problem is, trusting in riches. And so James is going to say some very strong things, and I guess there's a little question here whether this is written for Christians or if this is written, not written for Christians, but if the rebuke is for Christians or if he's just saying, look, if you're envying the wealthy, didn't we already deal with this? Remember back in chapter 2 where he said, the rich man comes in and the poor man comes in, and who are you tempted to take care of? You're tempted to treat the rich man better as if he's better. Well, let's strip the veneer away and let's look at the wealthy and let's try to understand their real situation. Now, should there be any Christians who are like this, then they would certainly want to take notice of it. But I don't think that chapter 5, verses 1 through 6 is necessarily for the Christian. I think it is more focused on, let's try to understand these people that we envy, these people that we look up to, these people that we want to be like, these people that have so much influence in the world today. And the sad reality is that their spiritual condition is not to be envied at all. Ray?
Can you repeat again? I didn't hear what you said. Come now, exactly what that means? Or...
Oh, okay. It's a command. It's in the imperative mode, which means this is the way the Greek-speaking people. It's only used here, and it's used again in verse 13. And it basically means, if you're in this condition, I need you up front. So if I were to say, all of you who are having a problem with greed, come sit up front here. How many of you would come? Well, we wouldn't want to. I don't have a problem with that. But as we read through this, we have to make a decision. Does that help, Ray?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't hear you the first time.
Okay, that's all right. That's all right. I appreciate you asking. So the first thing he says about the rich is what? Weep and howl. Is that something to be envied? Is that something? Boy, I'd sure like to be like that, where I could be weeping and howling. This is a view of the rich that we don't often see. Matter of fact, most people are like those people in chapter 2. When it comes to wealthy people, what do we tend to do with them? I think we tend to treat them better. And we tend to see them as special in some way or another. And of course, that's not the case at all. And that's what God is trying to strip away from. Now, as I say, if you look on the first page, you can see, number one, wealth is not sinful in itself. Number two, the desire to be rich is always what? It's always wrong. Paul told Timothy to be telling people that those who are minded to be rich are going to do what?
Fall into many foolish and...
They're going to fall into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which do what? Which drown you.
Perdition.
And then you pierce yourself with many sorrows. So when you look at wealth like that, oh boy, I really want to have that which will pierce me through with many sorrows and drown me in destruction and perdition. And no. So number four, Jesus commands us on page two. Number four, Jesus commands his disciples to keep away from wealth, instead to use it to further the kingdom as they gain it. So he describes the fact that we don't want to lay up treasures on earth. How do we keep from laying treasures on earth? America's kind of an interesting culture, because if you have ambition and you're good at what you do, what's going to come naturally? Success and wealth. But how does a Christian protect himself from that? Well, what did Paul say? Charge those who are rich in this present age to do what? To do good, to be ready to communicate, and ready to share. So communicate, which is fellowship, and sharing. So the wealthy person, by laying up treasures in heaven, what's he doing with his money? See, I write my bill for the car, and I write my bill for this and for that, but what about spiritual things? Well, our giving, how did Paul put that again in 1 Corinthians 16? We should be giving as we have been prospered. Well, I guess if I'm being prospered well, how should I be giving? Very well. So, and then number four, Jesus commands his disciples to keep away from wealth. And so, and then I spend the rest of the chapter, the rest of this page, just discussing the fact that we in America, with all of our technology and all of our medical care and all of our transportation and all of our abilities, there's just no way in the history of the world has anybody been quite as blessed as we are. And of course, you could say, well, there might have been some, but with all the technological breakthroughs and all the things we have access to, can you imagine how much you'd have to pay to get the kind of entertainment that we can get on television for free? How much would Solomon pay to get all those singers to sing for him?
Depends on how
wise you are. Yes. Okay, so what James does, let's turn to the top of page three. These are two very interesting Greek words, the weep and howl. They describe pain and sorrow and bereavement, but the main focus of these two words is it's coming out of your mouth. You are wailing. You are crying out with agony and anguish. And how does Jesus describe it? In one of the parables, there will be weeping and gnashing of... Have you ever gnashed your teeth? You ever been so upset that you gnashed your teeth? Some people have. Some people, I don't know this would be an agony. And, you know, you think about it, when Jesus says, depart, you cursed, into the fire preserved for the devil and his angels, if you're in that number, and you know there's no way to ever get out of here, and you know that you had the opportunity while you lived in this life to have gotten there, you think you'll be howling, gnashing your teeth, and crying? I think it's going to be terrible. Virgil?
One of the expositors that I read about this years ago, gnashing of teeth was more of a cultural thing, a display of discomfort or of disagreement or whatever. It's somewhat like tearing a garment.
Right.
That is along that same line, or beating something to make dust rise.
Yeah, and that's a good point. We all have our own way. Yes. Some people cry inwardly. Are they in less pain than the people who yell out? No, but that's just... But what James is getting across here is that what will a man give in exchange for his soul? If you go before God on the judgment day and you have spent your time, as he's going to go on to describe here, you will be in agony. And as I say, he's talking to the rich, but most rich people are never going to read this. So who's he really talking to? He's talking to us. Don't envy these people. Don't want to be like these people. Don't look at these people and treat them like they're better than the poor. Be very careful how you look at wealth. Wealth is a very dangerous thing. And so he starts out with just some really strong, you're going to be weeping and howling because of the miseries that are going to come upon you, the hardships, the troubles. Now, what do most people think? Once I get wealthy, what happens to hardship and trouble? It just goes away. Well, what does James say? No, don't see it. Don't see it like that. So this is a real eye-opener, this section. Now, verse 2 toward the bottom of page 3, we have a term that means to become rotten. This is more of a fruit term. We're going to get later to metal terms. What happens to metal? It rusts and corrodes. What happens to fruit and food? It corrupts. So this term means to be rotten. It means to be corrupted. So how do riches become rotten?
Time.
You have a desire for them, what you do with them, and that they become more important to you than anything else.
Okay, all right. But when God sees the wealth of a man who's using his money for good things and accomplishing tremendous things and seeking first the kingdom and giving is prospered, is that money corrupted?
No.
No, see, that money is being properly used and it looks beautiful to God. But if we just hold it back, if we just hang on to it, if we're selfishly squandering it on ourselves, then how does God see it? And hang on a second, Virgil. You think about the rich man. When the rich man woke up in torment, what do you think he's thinking? How in the world did I get here? Well, the time to think about that is not then. All right, go ahead, Virgil.
Yeah, there's an old saying that you cannot outgive God.
Well, that's true.
But the principle is that it's taught in the scripture. There's no question about it. But as far as those words, like I framed that way,
right.
I don't know that they're there. But it is a principle that is taught to us.
That's true.
God has given us everything. And when we turn around with what we have and become stingy with it, then shame on us.
Right. And that's really, I think, the main point here is that we have to see our wealth the way God sees it. It's just a gift. It's an opportunity to use something for God. And that's what Peter says. Remember in 1 Peter chapter 4, he says, if anyone has received a gift, minister it among yourselves. And so if the gift is wealth, then that individual, and I've met people like this, you have too, and there are some here, who have the ability to give a lot of money for causes. And it's always wonderful when we talk about a famine or we talk about an individual who needs help and to realize that the people here aren't going to say, yeah, but I was just getting ready to buy a new car and a new TV, so I can't do that. No, what they say is, I was going to buy a TV, but this is more important, so I'm willing to share and ready to communicate. If we don't do that, then as he goes on to say, these garments that are so beautiful, but how does God see them on the top of page 4? They look moth-eaten to God because you're not using yourself properly. So now we get to verse 3 and we've moved from rotting food to corrosion on the money that we have. So you remember what Jesus said about that? I've got it right in the middle, well, toward the top, but it's more in the middle of page 4. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. So what's James saying when he says your clothes are moth-eaten and your money is rusted? Is he drawing from this? I suspect that he is. I think that he's trying to help people understand what Jesus was saying, and that is that moth and rust can destroy even if you can't see it. Even if, and so this becomes something critical, because this passage could be talking about you and me. If we keep too much of our money, if we see people in need and we won't share it because we're not as rich as Donald Trump, we're not as rich as these billionaires, so we have to be more careful with our money. Well, at a certain point, what does God say? Your money is now rusted, and that rust is going to be a witness against you. So, you know, we think about money at interest. What happens to money as you keep it longer and longer in the bank? Well, you get more and more. But as you keep it longer and longer, what can also happen? This rust. Do we have any rust on our money? I think this is a question for all of us to ask ourselves. As far as God is concerned, and I look at the use of the money that I have used, it is a gift from God that God expects us to be careful with. And, of course, these people, as I say, after spending all afternoon on this, I'm pretty sure these are not people that are Christians. I'm pretty sure these are people who are worldly people that, like in chapter 2, this rich man that comes in, does he ever tell us whether he's a Christian or not? He just says a wealthy man comes in with rings and a poor man comes in and is clearly poor, and you treat the one better than the other. Does it matter if he's a Christian or not? See, it doesn't make any difference. And so here I think we're dealing with a similar thing. These people, if these are Christians, why doesn't he tell them to repent? He says, howl and weep because your miseries are coming upon you. Well, is that how Christians talk to other Christians? I mean, we might talk like that at the end after we've tried every other means, but before we get to curses and imprecations, what do we usually say? You need to repent. If you repent, you can be forgiven. But there's no repentance or forgiveness here. This is simply a strong statement of rebuke. So, again, verse 3, he says, your gold and your silver are corroded or rusted. Now, can that happen really?
Yes.
Well, it can get tarnished, but can it rust?
That is rust.
Well, it's okay. All right. Well, I'm not going to argue with you, George. I'm just saying, if I see cars all the time driving down a road that they've actually rusted all the way through, can that happen with gold and silver? It can get a little tarnish on it, but is it going to rust all the way through? See, and that's the point I'm making. I'm not arguing with you, George. I'm just saying that there are some metals that if you don't take care of them, they're going to completely be destroyed, and other metals that won't happen to. But spiritually, can they rust through? Can your gold rust through? Can your wealth rust through? And this is something. It's interesting, you know, the passage here in Ecclesiastes that says, there is a severe evil which I have seen under the sun, riches kept for their owner to his hurt. And we've all seen that. We've seen that. And so if there's anything we should have done with our money and we didn't do it, what's going to happen with that rust on the judgment day? See, we think about people are going to testify against us. What does this say? The misuse of your wealth will also testify against you, and God can see this rust. Now, the term rust in this passage is a little different than the corroding rust of the previous passage. It's actually made up of a term that can also mean poison. When you get bit by a serpent, what happens to the flesh around the bite? It just starts to corrode and putrefy. And so if it's metal, then it's rust. If it's flesh, then it's corrosion. Matter of fact, a derivative of this term is used by Paul when he says it eats like cancer or gangrene. And it's a derivative of this term. And so this is something that all of us need to be careful about when it comes to our money. So, you know, when it comes to the first day of the week contribution, when it comes to our taking care of the needs as they arise, if we never do that, then what's happening to all that money we're using? And we never have any. Maybe we never get rich. We've just squandered it all on ourselves. But what's happening to that money? It's rusting. It's rusting, and that rust is going to be a witness against you on the judgment day. So the Lord, again, he's just trying to help us understand. Then at the bottom of page 4, it's going to do what to your flesh? It's going to eat your flesh or consume your flesh like fire. Now, this is something, again, as you look at this and you're thinking, okay, is this talking to us Christians? Is this something that we need to be concerned with? Well, of course it is. But he's describing a group of people that I hope we're never even closely aligned to, because he is expressing here a very great danger. This is why wealth is such a dangerous thing. It's not wrong to have it, and it's a wonderful thing to have it, and it makes life easier in so many ways. But there is a spiritual danger here that we all need to recognize and we all need to understand. And it isn't just that it can lead you away from the faith and pierce yourself with many sorrows. Here's another component of it, and that is that it's rusting, it's corroding, it's poisoning, and it's going to become a witness that can eat your flesh like fire. So, you still envy these people? You still wish I could be? If you were a billionaire, what would God's expectation of you be? I don't want that. I really don't want that. I don't want to be that rich, because the more money you have, to whom much is given, much is expected. And to whom the more you have, the more is required. Brian?
Yeah, and it's interesting when you think about this idea of heaping up money. You know, of course, we know that the love of money is the root of all evil. We know that storing up treasures, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And then you have like the parable of the talents, where sometimes you're so afraid to lose that money, you heap up the money. It doesn't really matter the reason, right? It's wrong. And much like the man who had all the wealth and his solution was to build bigger barns and not use it for the Lord or for those in need,
right?
His soul was required of him. So there can be a variety of reasons, right? But ultimately, we're going to have to answer for that. So.
Yeah. And it's tough in our culture, because we have all kinds of insurance, we have all kinds of retirement plans, and most of us have them. Is that wrong to have one? I don't think it's wrong to have one. I think that planning for the future is part of being a frugal and a wise individual, but there's a line there. We've got to try to figure out where the line is. And I think James is giving us a good opportunity here to take a good look at this. And we have to understand that wealth is going to be a part of our judgment, and how we used our wealth is going to be a part of our judgment. And so seeking first his kingdom and laying up treasures in heaven is going to require that, even though we may not consider ourselves to be rich, the sad reality is everybody in Malawi, when I talk about people in America, what are they seeing?
Rich.
They're seeing rich people. And of course, I don't consider myself to be rich, but by their standards, am I rich?
Yeah.
I've got a lot more than they have. They have to worry about their daily bread. So, again, try not to give yourself a pass here. Yes, we are not among the rich in American culture, but I think we are among the rich in what's described here. But now we're going to take it in a little different direction, because now we're going to talk about, how did you get your money? Are there lawful ways to get your money and unlawful ways to get your money? And so this is another risk. This is another danger that people have to look at. Now, in this particular case, he talks about heaping up treasure in the last days. Indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. All right, so let's talk about laying up treasures in the last days. Now, when did the last days start? I hope I've given that verse enough times now we all know where it is.
It started with the beginning of the church.
Okay. In Acts 2, Peter said, "This is that which was spoken by the prophet Joel, who said, it shall come to pass
in the last or latter days
that..." And then he says, so when did the latter days start? When did the last days start? In Acts 2. When Peter sat down at the right hand of God. What's next? Throughout the entire Old Testament period, we were looking forward to a new age, a new Messiah, a new way of going, a new covenant. What are we looking for now? This is it. Then comes 1 Corinthians 15:24. What comes next? The end. Now, when you're reading a book and you come to the last page and it says the end, what's next? Nothing. Well, nothing that we understand. A new heavens and a new earth where righteousness dwell. A judgment day in which we will be determined whether we're going to enter that or not. So, is this the age to be heaping up treasure on earth when you don't know when the Lord's going to come back and it's all going to be gone? That parable, I think it was quoted a few minutes ago, about that man. This very night, what does God say? Your soul is required. And all of that that you heaped up, where is it? It's gone. It's somebody else has it now. And like Solomon said, remember how frustrated Solomon was in Ecclesiastes? How do I know if the guy's even going to be intelligent or not, or if he's just going to squander it all? Why should I do that? Why not use the money, like Jesus said, to lay up treasures in heaven? And so, am I saying here, don't leave any inheritance to your children? No, I don't say that. I'm saying, use what you have while you have it to the best possible good, and then the rest of it's going to take care of itself. So, you have heaped up treasures in the last days. What a foolish thing to do. Then, indeed, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud. Now, this one's kind of tough for us. How many laborers do you have? See, we don't. But can we cheat people sometimes? Can you get the wrong change when you're giving somebody a 10 and they give you change for a 20? What are you going to do? You're going to stop them and say, wait a minute, you're going to be in trouble at the end of the day here. You've given me too much money. Or do we say, oh boy, hit the lottery? Just even that term, hit the lottery. I mean, when people talk like that, what are you thinking? There's something wrong when we see someone else's misfortune as our fortune. Because agape love, whenever I see someone else's misfortune, what do I want to do? I want to be the one with the misfortune. I want to be the one that helps them. Did I see a hand? Virgil, was your hand up? Yeah.
Isn't this dealing more with a man that hires somebody to do a job or to work in his field?
Well, yeah, that's what I said. But how many of us have that today? Well, we've got to look for an application here.
Well, yes. But we do it all the time whenever we hire somebody to do something. And if we know that the service that they're rendering to us is worth a lot more than what we are paying, I think that's what this is talking about, defrauding these people.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And that the person that's working the field should get $2 because that is maybe not worth the going rate, but anyway, that's what it's worth.
Right.
But because of this poor person's status of life, he doesn't have the ability to negotiate. He's at the mercy of the landowner, or only gives him $1.
Right. And Prince talks about stuff like that happening in India.
Yeah.
That's something that happens there.
It's rampant, really. And
because
we look at this country too.
Yeah, and he's dealing with it right now. So, but like I said, okay, we can give ourselves a pass. When's the last time you hired anybody and kept back their wages? So we don't have to worry about. Well, no, there's other ways. There's other ways to cheat people and be dishonest, and that's the issue here. And so the issue is when you defraud other people, you put that extra 15 minutes on your time card when you really didn't have it. Are you defrauding your employer?
Sure.
Yeah. So these are things that we all have to give consideration to because again, I would hope that no Christian would be reading this saying, wow, he's talking about me here. I've held back wages for people who mowed my fields. But this is what wealthy people do. And so this is something, what I don't want to do is I don't want to be like this. I don't want to even come close to this. So it's nice to be able to get, and as I say, some commentators say, well, what this is doing is it's helping us not to envy the rich. And other people might say, what this is doing is it's showing us the terrible aspects of being rich and then asking us to look and make sure we don't have any of these things. And I think both of those are probably good descriptions of what's going on here. And so I don't want to be this person who is cheating people. You know, I really like that proverb that says, you go to the garage, they don't have garage sales back then, but the buyer says, it is bad, and then as soon as he goes away, what does he do? Man, you see the good deal I got here? I can't believe it. I talked them down. Well, how'd you talk them down? Well, I lied. I said, this is a piece of junk. I don't really want it. Well, in your heart, was it a piece of junk? No, you really wanted it. So you end up getting something you know is worth 10 times more than you paid for it. And I often think that when I'm reading about these guys that buy something and then, like the Antique Roadshow, or there was a deal a few weeks ago where a guy bought a coin at a flea market for 50 cents or something, or a dollar, and it ended up being worth $100,000. And I often think to myself, I wonder if they went back and shared it with that person if they could. Would you? If we had an opportunity to make things fair. But that's what we're dealing with here. And some of us are so frugal that we squeak when we walk, right? You ever heard that? We're so frugal that... Anyway, this is something... Don't give yourself a pass because you've never hired somebody to clean your carpets and then tried to Jew them down or get them down after you got done. Because we all know once you sign the contract, it's done. You're going to pay whatever it is you agreed to pay. But there are other ways that people are dishonest today. Now, the cries of the reaper have reached the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Now, Sabaoth, it's actually in one of our songbooks. This is not, for some reason they didn't translate it, translators didn't translate it. In the New Testament, it's found in Romans chapter 9, and it's found here. But in the Old Testament, unless you're reading the Old King James, you're going to read the Lord of Hosts. Jehovah, the Lord of Hosts. About 300 and some odd times in the Old Testament, this term is used. And the Jews were very familiar with it. The Gentiles, of course, wouldn't be quite as familiar with it. But it's a term describing the fact that God is over all. The Lord of Hosts. He's over the archangels. He's over the angels. He's over all men. He's over the devil. Is there anyone that God does not have control over? The answer is no. So you are putting yourself in a situation where the person who has absolute control is now listening to people who are crying out to him that you've cheated them. And what's going to happen next? Right?
He's omnipotent.
Yeah, he's omnipotent. He is the Lord of Hosts. Jehovah, the Lord of Hosts. It's a term that is used so many times. God, the Lord, or God, Jehovah of Hosts. And it is a term of omnipotence and absolute power. So now we get to verse 5. You have lived on the earth in pleasure, or lived luxuriously. Let's go ahead and turn to page 6. And right at the top, there's two words here, and they're joined together quite a bit in the New Testament. And the one term means to live delicately, or live luxuriously, or live a soft, luxurious life. Now that's something those of us who have to go to work every day, do we live that kind of life? No, because we have to work. But these people, they don't have to work, and so they can kind of pick and choose. When there's, let me read that paragraph there. When there are no limits, it's difficult for many people to set them. Although a life of luxury can mean different things to different cultures, it isn't hard to identify. It consists of free time and no monetary constraints. So this is the danger. Now, I found it interesting, if you look about a fourth of the way down the page, Ezekiel, it says, look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of idleness. Now, would you characterize one of the reasons why evangelism is so hard to do in our culture? Because there's so much idleness. There's so many people with so much free time and so many things to fill it with. Matter of fact, there's so many things to do that most people don't have time for the important things because they're watching their television programs, they're watching their sports programs, they're playing their video games, they're playing with their cell phones. And so, now, am I saying all of that's wrong? No, but there has to be a line. When there's no limits, when people are retired, can they squander their whole day just on themselves and never quite get around to reading the Bible or praying or doing the things the Lord wants them to do? So abundance of idleness is a grave danger that he's dealing with here. And then Ecclesiastes says the same thing, the verse right above it. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays. So it's the same basic concept, is that this is one of the dangers that can happen to people. And so this is something that we need to look at. Now the next term, which is found right underneath Ezekiel, it has more of a moral component than the first one. The first one just means you have a lot of free time and you don't do anything with it. The second one has more of the idea of a voluptuous life, giving oneself to pleasure. Matter of fact, this is the term in 1 Timothy, you remember where it says that the woman who gives herself to pleasure is dead while she lives. Same term is here. So you've given yourself over. I think this is the Las Vegas fast track, beautiful people lifestyles of the rich and famous. Well, that's not something to envy. That's something to pity. And we need to get our mind clear on these things, because how does he put it at the end? You fatten your hearts as in a day of slaughter. What does the cow think when you finally get that corn out? And he can eat as much as he wants all day long. Is he pretty happy? Yeah, but what's next? Yeah, he'd be smarter not to eat any of that. He'd be, oh, I'm not eating any of that. I want to live. But and that's what God is saying here. You need to realize that what you're doing when you do this is you're fattening your hearts in as in a day of slaughter. And then verse 6, I'm gonna deal with that one a little bit more next week. It's kind of tough to know whether verse 6 should be more tied to verse 7 or more tied to the previous section. Because what does condemning and murdering the just have to do with wealth? Well, maybe, but does it necessarily connect? I mean, anybody can do that. So, Ken, you have something to say?
I'm just going to say that in my mind, it ties back to the rich that keeps back the wages.
Okay, all right. So not only do we keep back their wages, but when they make enough trouble, we put them to death. And that's been done many times in the Jewish nation. We read about. How about Ahab wanting Naboth's field? How'd that end? You've killed the just. Okay, so we'll look at that next week, but we'll go ahead and stop there. Anyway, I think the upshot of this class is we shouldn't envy the rich. We should not want to be like the rich. That is not a lifestyle that God's people should be aspiring to or looking for. And if that means we should be giving a lot more of our money to the Lord and to the needs of the poor, then we probably better get busy doing that. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there. Thanks, everybody.